We have a motion to go back into open session.
So moved.
So moved by Mark. Frida?
Second.
Second by Kevin Malloy. So we want a roll call vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Michelle is chair of the Personnel Committee. You want to move item, action item 12BA069? No. No. The resolution coming out of executive session. Just above.
Want me to move it?
Please.
Okay, sure. Be resolved that the Board of Education hereby appoints Daniel McTiernan as a member of the Clinton Township Board of Education for a term that shall start today through our next organizational meeting in January 2013.
We have a second to that motion?
Second.
Second by Kevin Malloy. Any discussion? Before we take a vote, Mr. Cagliardi, do you want to explain the length of the appointment?
Certainly.
If you would, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. President. As was just discussed in executive session and at the request of the board, the process for filling an unexpired term was always a little confusing, and it's even more confusing now that most board elections in the state have been moved. So when you fill an unexpired term, you are not necessarily appointing the person to fill the entire unexpired term left by whoever has left the board. You're filling the position until the next election. So the appointment this evening is through the board's reorganization in January 2013. When the board election is held in November, this board will have four seats up. It will have the usual three-year terms, and then there will be one-year term, the unexpired term left by the resignation of Mr. Kaplan. So in the event this gentleman is selected this evening and he is not frightened off by the next 7 months that transpire here, he is free to run for the additional 1 year, or he's free to run for any of the three-year terms. But when you vote, Clinton Township votes in November, three-year terms and one-year term will be on the ballot.
And just because he'll be filling in for Mr. Kaplan doesn't mean he can only run for the one-year term. He can run for a three-year term.
That is correct. He'd have to choose between one or the other. No citizen could submit for both, but he would be free to run for one of the three-year terms as well.
And just by way of a reminder, anyone in the community interested in filling one of those vacant Board of Education seats has until June 5th to fill out the paperwork, and we have that in the board office,
yes.
The paperwork required. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Ms. Cresty?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. Frieda?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Ms. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Ms. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mr. Dinkler?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Congratulations. Again, on behalf of the entire board, congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Before we move on to the report of the superintendent of schools, I have a couple of committee appointments to make. Mark Kaplan had been chair of our Facilities and Finance Committee, and I've asked Kevin Sturgis if he would take over that responsibility. So as of this evening, Kevin Sturgis will be the chair of the Facilities and Finance Committee. Kevin Sturgis will be leaving vacant the chair of the Policy and Curriculum Committee, and I've asked Rachel McLaughlin if she would chair that particular committee. So Rachel McLaughlin will be the chair of the Policy and Curriculum Committee. I've also asked Kevin Malloy if he would serve as a member of the Personnel and Negotiations Committee. And Kevin Malloy will be serving on that particular committee. And Dan McTiernan, as of this evening, will be a member of the Facilities and Finance Committee. So those are the appointments to the various committees. Mr. Carroll is not here this evening, so I will briefly go over some of the information that is normally contained in the superintendent's report. Our enrollment as of May 1st, 2012, was 1,632 students. Suspension report, we had one suspension during the month of April, and that was at CTMS, one out-of-school suspension. And as far as the HIV, there were two incidents reported, investigated, and we could find no evidence of bullying at either CTMS or at Spruce Run for the two incidents that were looked into. We're now at the part of the agenda that calls for public comment on agenda items only. So I would ask anybody in the audience that would like to address the board on an agenda item only, and we will have first recognition of the public after the agenda items, where people in the audience could ask the board any question or raise a concern. If you would like to address the board, I would ask you to state your name and your residence and try to limit your comments, your questions, your concerns to 3 minutes. We are now on public comments, agenda items only.
Good evening, Nick Corcadillis, Old Mountain Road, Clinton Township. This is pertaining to new business, a resolution you have on regarding the Open Public Meetings Act. I read your resolution, and although I think it's a good thing you're doing this, I'm concerned that you really don't provide a clear picture to the public of what it is that you're correcting here. One of the allegations that was made against the board, it says the board passed an oral motion to go into executive session on three dates, February 27th, March 26th, March 29th, and then subsequently recorded in the minutes a more detailed resolution than that which was orally passed. That was based on a draft complaint filed with the board by Mr. John Paff, who has threatened to file suit against the board if it doesn't correct this. Your resolution also refers to a complaint from a separate citizen, happens to be me. You had no problem naming me when you passed a resolution stating that I didn't represent the board to the State Department of Education. You could have used my name in here, I guess, but be that as it may. In that complaint, I make certain allegations to the county prosecutor of Hunterdon. And I think it's important the public understand what exactly is being alleged and what exactly the board has done and failed to do. At the March 29, 2012 board meeting, the board decided to go to executive session. In the minutes, in the approved minutes of the meeting, which are supposed to be a statement of what actually was said and happened in the meeting, it says the following, I speak it verbatim. Resolved by the Board of Education of Clinton Township as per Chapter 231 PL 1975, A, that it is hereby determined that it is necessary to meet in executive session to discuss matters legally rendered confidential. B, the matter discussed will be made public if and when confidentiality is no longer required, and action pursuant to said discussion shall take place only at a public meeting. C, the length of the meeting is thought to be approximately 45 minutes. D, action will not be taken upon return. Motion by M. Kaplan, seconded by K. Sturgis. The motion and the resolution was adopted by the full membership of the board at 10:12 p.m. According to the board's official recording available on the website, there was no such resolution. This resolution in your minutes is totally fictitious. These words were not spoken in the meeting. And yet the board not only voted to approve these minutes, but you voted to approve similar statements in earlier meetings. You did it on March 26, 2012. The same four paragraphs, A through D, signed off, motion. The resolution was adopted. The resolution was never spoken in public. The minutes are supposed to reflect exactly what happened in your meeting. The month before, February 27, 2012, once again, an executive session resolution with a motion made to adopt it by the full membership of the board. None of these resolutions were ever made in public. According to the Open Public Meetings Act, when you make a resolution to go into executive session, you are supposed to state it in a public meeting so the public can hear it. Intelligent, well-educated people sitting on the board. You have highly paid professionals working for you who clearly understand the law. In your resolution tonight, you state that any oversights or errors were made inadvertently and without any intention to conceal the nature of the executive sessions or to mislead the public. Maybe in March a couple times, maybe in February, there were oversights. I still have a hard time with that. When you go back to July 25th, 2011, a year ago, the exact same thing happened. A detailed four-paragraph motion for a resolution was voted on and approved by the board. Then the minutes were approved by a vote of the board because you read the minutes, that's what was said in the meeting, and you voted to approve them. A year before that, August 30th, 2010, we have the same problem. A year before that, when you first started recording your meetings, September 21, 2009, once again, a four-paragraph A, B, C, D, and then a motion seconded, a vote to approve that never happened in public, in spite of the fact that the Open Public Meetings Act requires that you speak these words in public so that the public will know what you are going to discuss topically in executive session. And so the public will also know, under the Open Public Meetings Act, when you will release those minutes, when it's no longer relevant to keep them secret. So this goes on year after year after year. Now, I didn't have time to go through all your public minutes and all the audio of all your meetings going back to 2009, but I don't have to be a betting man to guess that every single time you've had an executive session, you did this. And again, you have paid professionals. You have an attorney who was supposed to guide you, and yet you keep doing this. In your resolution, you make a commitment to start remedying this. And I think that's great. Mr. Paff, whatever his reasons, decides to go around the state of New Jersey threatening to file suit against municipalities, school boards, because they fail to honor the Open Public Meetings Act to the letter. So it's a good thing that now you're reading the detailed law into the record. The problem is that you say in your resolution, therefore be it resolved, the executive session minutes of the board's February 27th, March 26th, and March 29th meetings be and hereby are revised as follows. So you're amending your executive session minutes to reflect that there is a need to meet an executive session. I don't understand how you can amend executive session minutes to state that there is a need to meet in executive session. That needs to be said in your public session. But the bigger problem is, I don't understand, and my use of the term falsify has been questioned. I don't understand how you can legally go back into minutes of a public meeting and add words to the minutes, add and create words that were never spoken. I don't believe that's legal. Bigger problem. At your meeting on February 27, 2012, you did a resolution approving minutes from several weeks, meetings, months, and executive session minutes, including minutes of the January 23, 2012 meeting and minutes of the January 23, 2012 executive session. You signed off on these, you approved them, you said these were correct. Let's go to your public meeting on January 23, 2012, executive session. Once again, resolved by the Board of Education, A, B, C, D. Right under that, in the approved minutes, there is no motion. There's no vote. The resolution's here. Problem is, you go to the audio, once again, the resolution was never made. The public was never told what you were going to go into private session about. What Mr. Dinkoff said, and I will quote from the audio, "I'll entertain a motion that we adjourn to go into executive session to discuss personnel for approximately 30 minutes, and no action will be taken afterwards." So you went into executive session. Again, without a proper resolution, and even the minutes are wrong, even if the minutes are fabricated, the minutes are still wrong, you didn't get it right. I submitted an Open Public Records Act request recently for the executive session minutes of that meeting, January 23rd, 2012. The description of what happened in that meeting is described in one paragraph. Now, mind you, the purpose of the meeting, as stated in the fabricated resolution, is, quote, "legally rendered confidential." That's why you're taking it into closed session. What Mr. Dinkoff said on the audio was, "it's to discuss personnel." Here's what the minutes of that meeting state was discussed. "The Communications Committee distributed a report that outlines a search process that could be used to interview the superintendent candidates. The board had a lengthy discussion on various options to consider. The board agreed that the first interview would be conducted by the board members, and the list of candidates would be further reduced to 2 to 4 individuals. A second round of interviews would include meeting with the board and a second group comprised of 2 tenured principals, 4 teachers, the director of special education, and the director of curriculum, and 1 CTEA member. The second round of interviews would be scheduled for February 25th, 2012, and appointed in early March. Be it resolved, we adjourn the meeting," so on and so on. So what's the problem with that? Number one, the first violation is that the minutes in your public session resolution to go into this executive session are fictitious. Number two, the written minutes, which are fictitious, do not follow the A and B section of the Open Public Meetings Act, where it says you must disclose what the topic will be that you're going to talk about so that it's adequately understood by the public. And B, you don't explain when these minutes will be made public. Number three, the oral reason that was given on the audio for the executive session is inadequate. To discuss personnel is not descriptive enough under the requirements of the law. Number four, and worst of all, the topic that you talked about is not covered under NJSA 10:4-12. It is not covered under any of the 9 reasons for why you can take something into closed session. Mr. Dinkoff said in the audio it's to discuss personnel. There is no provision for discussing how you're going to structure an interview process. In the Open Public Meetings Act, it says specifically that one of the reasons you may go to closed session is to talk about specific individuals relating to a personnel matter. At this juncture in time, there was no discussion of specific individuals. All you were doing was deciding, and I give you credit for this, you were deciding how to go about interviewing your candidates. It's a good thing. There's no reason you couldn't have done it sitting at this dais in front of the public. There was no legal reason you violated the Open Public Meetings Act, because you went into that session and you talked about something that you should have talked about in front of the public. Hiring a superintendent makes a material difference to everyone in this room and everyone in this community. Worse, you took an action, I contend, because in your own minutes it says the board agreed that the first interview would be conducted, so on and so on and so on. You determined a process. You took an action. You made a decision, which is prohibited from being done outside the view and the hearing of the public by the Open Public Meetings Act. Folks, there is nothing inadvertent here. This is intentional. You can't go for 3 years having two different business administrators, professional staff paid hundreds of thousands of dollars annually, certified people, an attorney, a board president who's a career school administrator, who knows better. Everything you do is tainted because we have no idea what you're discussing in closed session because you don't know what qualifies for closed session. So to use Mr. Dinkoff's expression, when he accused two of your board members without substance of ethics violations, I ask you to search your souls and your hearts. What have you been talking about in closed session? You don't have an attorney in closed session. What mystifies me, really? Clinton Township Municipality has a budget less than half of yours, but has an attorney present twice a month at every public meeting. Why? To protect the council, also to protect the public. Every single one of you has been to a council meeting. You know the legal wording that's recited under the Open Public Meetings Act before the council goes to closed session. Your other problem, and I won't get into specific meetings, you go into closed session based on your written records and based on your published audio. You go into closed session, you adjourn your closed session. Do you adjourn your public session? Do you adjourn your public session while you're in closed session? Do you come back into public session to close your public session? Because guess what? Under this pesky little thing called the Open Public Meetings Act, an adjournment is an action, it's decision-making of the board. Decision-making can only be done in public. The proper process is you adjourn your closed session, you come back in here, maybe you're in the same room already, you then do a resolution to re-enter public session. That requires a resolution. Now you may legally take an action to adjourn your public meeting. If you're adjourning your public meetings in closed session, you're in violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. So why am I going through all this diatribe? Technicalities, people say. Well, the board can just change its minutes. Well, I submit to you, you now have an obligation to go back, I don't know how many years, every time you had an executive session, you have an obligation to the public and to yourselves and to the law, and to modify your public minutes to reflect what was actually said in the meeting. You don't get to go back without the public present and now recite the Open Public Meetings requirements and put them into your minutes. That's bogus. So the problem is we don't know what you're doing. We don't know what actions you've taken, which according to the Public Meetings Act, Open Public Meetings Act, can be undone if they were tainted by an improper and illegal process. So you're in a mess. We're in a bigger mess because we just went through a lengthy budget process where you were conducting closed sessions. I have no idea what you were talking about. I have no idea what kind of questions to ask you because I don't know what you're deliberating about in the back room. Why do I say this is intentional? I don't think you can say that this was inadvertent, and I'll tell you why. If you know that the Open Public Meetings Act requires you to put those four A, B, C, D sections and paragraphs into your minutes, and you then put them into your minutes fictitiously when they weren't stated, you know enough to speak them during the meetings. So how can you know the law so that you put it in the minutes, but you don't speak those words which are required by the law during your meeting? I can't forgive you for that. You have to know better. And even if you don't understand the law, and I understand board members, council members, anybody gets elected, you don't know everything. You learn as you go. You're forced to believe your leadership. You're forced to believe your board president, your board administrator, your attorney, your superintendent. They're the experts. That's who you pay hundreds of grand a year to. They're the people who are supposed to explain it to you. Why isn't that happening? What you do know well enough, from meeting to meeting to meeting, you see those A, B, C, D legalese stuff that you're signing off on when you approve the minutes? You know that didn't get said. So why are you voting to approve it? I spent 3 years as mayor. I've watched other mayors, before me and after me, in Clinton Township. This kind of thing never happens. The Open Public Meetings Act is read religiously. So you're at a point now where virtually everything you're doing is open to question. When you add on top of that Mr. Dinkoff's behavior over the past couple of months, accusing Ms. Sullivan, Mr. Frieda, accusing them of violations of the Ethics Act while he sits there and allows this to happen, and then when they confront him and ask him for evidence, he says the attorney, quote-unquote, veto, pardon me, that's the word he used on the audio, Vito advised me to make these statements? I don't know about whether Mr. Gagliardi advised him to make accusations or not. But Mr. Dinkoff invoked Mr. Gagliardi's words. And then when he was confronted for evidence, he said he didn't have it. What did the rest of you do sitting here? The rest of you sign off on the minutes. The rest of you signed off on Mr. Dinkoff's actions. I didn't hear a word from any of you issuing a resolution. You filed a resolution against me because I dared to go talk to the Department of Education and then talk to my elected officials. Mr. Dinkoff suggested shouldn't be talking to constituents or to the state without the knowledge of the administration. That's bunk. And the rest of you sit here and you don't contemplate a resolution to apologize to your fellow board members who were assailed, attacked, vilified in this room? You all need to look at what you're doing. I know you took seats on this board to try to help out our schools, our community. But the culture of this board goes back years. Former President Jeanine Gorman once said to me when I first got involved in our schools, I was trying to help out. And I said, it'd be great if we get more people to come to meetings. And she said to me, and this is when I realized we had a problem, she said to me, we don't want people to come to meetings. We want them to have pizza dinners with their families. Stay home. Let us do it. We know what we're doing. That was when I realized something was wrong. And then when I was mayor, a budget got rejected. The council met with, members of the council met with Mr. Dinkoff and some board members. And Mr. Dinkoff asked
me. Mr. Corcondelis, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You've gone on for 20 minutes already. Do you want us to respond?
According
to our bylaws, each statement made by a participant shall be limited to 3 minutes duration.
Mr. Dinkoff, you have already gone on the record as cutting me off and calling the police after 3 minutes because you don't like my political statement, and then 10 minutes later you allowed another individual who made complimentary statements to this board to speak longer than 3 minutes until he was done. Do you want to get sued for discriminatory application of the First Amendment? But you know what? I am done. I've said all I'm going to say. And I'm really fed up with this board and with the way you behave. You have an obligation under the law and to the public. I suggest you search your hearts and figure out what the right thing is to do. And the right thing to do is to start by making an apology to two of your board members.
Thank you, Mr. Corcadilla.
At the request of the board president, I'll just respond as it relates to the motion pending before the board in new business. Now, with that buildup, I'm either a talented legal professional or someone who has no idea what he's doing. Assuming that it's the former, let me explain quite clearly what is laid before you. As talented as I may be, absent my inventing and building for you a time machine, there's no way, no other way, to address the deficiencies in your minutes than what is spread before you. So while it is true that the words that we recommend that you add to your minutes for those executive sessions were not spoken and are not recorded in your minutes, because if they were, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. It's also true that there is no other way to address this. Now, there's no allegation made that by anyone that the board unlawfully took action in these executive sessions. If you did, then you'd be facing a much more serious problem, and that's the sort of incident that could allow actions taken by the board to be undone, because they weren't done pursuant to the law. In this particular case, the allegations are that you went into executive session on three different occasions without properly identifying for the public the reasons for going into an executive session. So since we don't have a time machine, the way to fix that is to advise the public after the fact, not ideal, but the only vehicle left to you right now, with the requisite legal specificity, the reasons for going into those executive sessions. Obviously, you'd be better off not being in this position, which is why part of our recommendation to you is that going forward, you'd be much more precise than you have been about your rationale for going into executive session. While examples were cited going back over the years, as was stated, I don't come to all your meetings, but I've been representing you for 17 years, and this is, by my recollection, the first time such an accusation has been levied at the board. I'm not aware of, nor has anyone provided any evidence other than accusation in terms of your intent in not being more specific. But whatever intent existed or did not exist, I guess will be ferreted out based upon the complaint pending before the prosecutor's office. Having said that, I'm absolutely confident that if the board were to adopt our recommended resolution under your new business, that it would resolve the problem to the extent it can be resolved. And that obviously, and I saw beginning with tonight's executive session, it'd be much more precise and specific when going into executive session. I would add, although it wasn't part of the complaints made in writing, that it is also appropriate to be specific when coming out of executive session, as well as when adjourning the board meeting, which is a public act, which should be taken in public. But as I said, in terms of actions taken by the board, there's no action taken by the board that's threatened as a result of the complaint or threatened complaints, which we seek to remedy by virtue of this recommended resolution presently before the board as a matter of new business. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
I have a question. Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
First of all, thank you for allowing the individual to speak way beyond, but I think that was appropriate in this particular case, so that was, thank you for allowing that. As far as revising these February 27th, March 26th, and March 29th minutes feels like revisionist history we're going to be doing here. Is it legally able to be done? I mean, can we legally do this, or I don't know. I mean, I'm not comfortable going back to the future here. And you know, I don't know if...
Well, there was a time machine in that move, if I remember correctly.
Right. I just want to make sure that we are legally doing what we're supposed to do, and that we're not recreating something just for the sake of saying, here it is. If we can't do it, and you know, we need to fess up and say we made a mistake, we didn't do it right, like you said, we're now taking the proper steps to move forward. But I don't know if we can't amend executive session minutes, or amend the language of it, then we should just say, we dropped the ball, we didn't get it right, we didn't do it right, and from this point forward, we are going to get it right, as evidenced by tonight.
Ironically, I think if you were to take that approach, of course, the public could say, well, then you'll never properly tell us why you went into executive session. So this is designed to remedy the problem. I'm comfortable that that's the way you do it. Quite frankly, even if you were accused of the more serious violation, which you're not, which is taking action in executive session, the prescribed methodology for addressing it is a do-over, which is exactly what you're doing here. So you would actually go through it again and you would take a vote to redo that which you didn't do properly. In this particular case, again, the violation is not that serious, but you're still resolving it the same way, which is redoing that which wasn't done properly in the first place. So this is a recognized, acceptable method for solving the problem. Admittedly not ideal, because we lack the time machine they had in Back to the Future. Right. But this is the only vehicle available to you now to advise the public, and going forward, to obviously do it with the precision required by law.
Is it legal? Is it legal? What we're doing, is it legally correct?
I think I've said repeatedly that it is, and I'd be ashamed to sit here if I was recommending something that wasn't. It's the only available remedy that this board has under these current circumstances. And as I said, well recognized, even if you had taken action in executive session, which you did not, as the appropriate solution.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, I'd like to.
Is this on an agenda item?
Yes, it is.
All right, if you would please state your name and address.
Yes, I will. My name is Sandra Sullivan. I am from 8 Haytown Road.
Can you speak into the microphone? I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
My name is Sandra Sullivan. I am from 8 Haytown Road, and my daughter-in-law sits on your board, Michelle Sullivan. I hadn't intended to speak this evening at all. I was here to hear what the board had to say. And I have made the decision to speak, and it's because of the attitude of several members of the board, which I found to be unconscionable. This is not a subject of humor. This is not a subject to be chatted over and laughed over. It is a very important subject, and I'm talking about the accusations made against two of your board members. I didn't even get told who those board members were, although I was at that board meeting and listened, surprisingly, to a resolution being read. You would have to be totally unaware of what is going on in the community not to know who the two people were that were being referred to as being unethical. Well, one of those persons was so unethical that she wouldn't even say to me what had been said in executive session. I have lived attached in the house. I do not know. I have never heard, have never been discussed, do not know phone calls, do not know executive session. And for me to have had to sit here and hear these supposedly anonymous names being read, and then to have to come here and hear conversation in which the legal representative and one of the other board members found it appropriate to be laughing and snickering about the conversation that was going on was to me a definite example of what is wrong with the public conception of the board's lack of sensibility to the community. And it is very disappointing that none of you had the courtesy or decency to offer an apology without being asked by a community member, when you clearly had to state in public that you had no evidence, that you couldn't follow through at this time, which is one of the favorite of political and legal phrases to use to leave it hanging in the air, what the ethics of the two people who don't apparently agree with what's to be done. I do have to stop now, because my blood pressure is getting much higher than it's allowed to get. But I want in the record that I find it a disappointment, and I had no intention to speak until I observed the behavior of some of the board members.
Thank you. You are aware of the fact that no board members' names were mentioned when that statement was read on March 29th?
As I said, you would have to be a complete moron not to have known.
I'd like to jump in there for a minute. At the last meeting, I read a public statement because my name, it was made known, one of the two in the newspapers. I think it was clearly one of the newspapers in a local community did put our names in there as we were one of the two. Now, let's not play charades, let's not sugarcoat this, let's not be naive about this. I read a statement last month, I clearly acknowledge I was one of them based on a newspaper article. Now, don't pretend we don't know who we're talking about. And Ms. Sullivan, you know. obviously. You weren't here last meeting. You weren't here last meeting. I read a public statement. I defended the situation. Because, quite frankly, now that the attorney's here, can I ask a question?
Yeah, Mark, I don't want to cut you off, but this is the public comment.
Yeah, and I'm following up with a comment about...
No, you want to bring something up under old business or new business, fine.
Well but we've always followed...
Do you have a question, ma'am? Would you state your name and address, please?
Are you not allowing me to follow up with Ms. Sullivan's comment?
This is a...
Wait a minute. She mentioned about names being involved, and I'd like to have an opportunity to speak on it. I don't think I'm wrong. Am I wrong, Mr. Gagliardi, to be allowed to speak to comment against an individual who's evoking a situation?
Whether you speak during the public comment section is up to the discretion of the
okay.
chair.
Okay. Well, I'm asking for courtesy, Mr. Board President. Are you going to give me the courtesy?
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Being that Mr. Gagliardi is here, can I ask you a question? Would you mind?
No, sir.
Concerning the situation at hand, concerning
sure.
the accusations. Okay. And I wrote it down. I would like to know why, absent conclusive and corroborating evidence relating to our board president's belief that ethical violations may have been committed by two board members relating to New Jersey School Board Member Code of Ethics, did you still proceed to advise our board president to make a public statement regarding the same? I find it bizarre that you would give such advice to our board president to publicly read such a statement into the record in making baseless accusations against two board members when no evidence or ethical violations existed. So I'm asking, what possessed you to give this kind of evidence to our board president? I need to know.
Okay. I didn't give any evidence to the board president. I wasn't asked to do any investigation. I wasn't involved in any hunt for evidence. And the first time that I saw the statement that was read was this evening. Okay? So the question asked of me was a pretty simple one. Board president had concerns about potential ethical violations by board members and said that he wanted to address it with the board. And he asked if that was the sort of thing that would be appropriate to discuss in public. And he said he wasn't going to mention any names. I didn't know what the specific allegations were. I didn't know who the board members involved were. It was in the course of a conversation about a number of things. I imagine that I speak to Jim about once a month. So in the course of that conversation, which wasn't specifically about this issue, he said he was going to address the issue with the board and asked if it would be appropriate to do it publicly. He wasn't going to say anything specific or mention any names. He was going to discuss his concerns about ethical behavior by board members. And I said, sure. So to the extent that there was an assumption about investigation or a hunt for evidence, there was no investigation. I was not involved with a hunt for evidence. My description to you of what transpired is my best recollection of the conversation, which, as I said, the point of the conversation was not this incident. And I know about as much as is stated in this statement, even at this time.
So you, when the board president called you asking for advice, you didn't see that document? He didn't talk to you about that document?
About the document, yes. Did I see it? Did I review it?
Well, not see it, but you were briefed about what it entailed.
That he had concerns about ethical behaviors by board members. He wanted to discuss it with the board, and he said he wanted to know if it would be appropriate to discuss publicly without mentioning anything specific in terms of the board members or the allegations. But he wanted to discuss it, and I said, yes, that would be appropriate.
Knowing that there was no conclusive evidence, knowing that he was just alleging and making accusations, you felt comfortable giving him that advice? These are serious accusations.
We did not discuss the details of the accusations. The essence of the conversation was whether that type of discussion would be appropriate in executive session or in public. Since we just spent some time going over the specific mm-hmm. reasons you can go into executive session, they don't apply. So they would be appropriate to discuss publicly. What the allegations were, the details of them, any investigation or evidence, there was no such inquiry or evidence review by my office. So you say knowing the flimsy nature of the allegations, whatever words you were using?
I used pathetic last month.
Okay. Whatever. I was not involved in that. And I, again, ironically, should that have been discussed? Obviously, the board is free to debate whether it should have been discussed at all, and that's not my role here, and I'm not wading into that. The essence of the question was, should it be discussed in executive session or in public? And a public discussion of that nature is appropriate because there's no specific exemption under the Open Public Meetings Act. So that was my advice then, and that would remain my advice now.
Well, we have discussed sensitive board issues in the past.
I don't know what sensitive board issues means. There's either an exception under the law or there isn't.
involving consideration and discipline, would that fall into that?
Without the details, it's hard for me to answer that question. But as I said, the nature of this conversation, and I've described it, was no more detailed than what I've described to you.
So you were giving him general, basic advice, and you weren't aware of the situation of the kind of advice that you were giving him?
I've described my conversation on this issue with the board president to the best of my recollection.
To the best of your recollection, okay. And did you...
That is correct. Correct. I said to the best of my recollection.
Did you tell him about the ramifications of what could happen? You know, did you say, I don't know if you call him Jim, Mr. Board, however you address, did you tell him, you know, this may not be the best thing to do, go public with this. You know, maybe you should figure out a way. It may not be good for the board. It may create bad feelings amongst the board. It may not be good for your community. It may not be good for your taxpayers. You know, did you take that into consideration?
Actually, I don't know how discussing the charges wouldn't be good for the taxpayers. What I do recall discussing...
Well, it's clearly not.
Well, let me finish, sir. What I do recall discussing was in terms of the potential seriousness of the allegations, which we did not discuss in detail, but we did discuss the possibility of ethics charges. And that, I said, was not in the taxpayers' interest. That is to say, a discussion about ethical concerns, in my view, based on my 20-some-odd years of representing school districts, is far more cost-effective and appropriate than ethics charges slung back and forth between a board and an individual board member or board members. I mean, there are some times when the behavior is such that it's unavoidable. But ethics charges, unless they're of such serious nature that you can tell that the board member would be removed from office, in my experience, are divisive. And they're expensive because the board member who is accused of ethics violations is entitled to representation at taxpayer expense. So in that sense, and I believe this was part of that conversation, or it may have been another conversation, but in that sense, what I said and would say here publicly, am saying here publicly, is that that type of discussion is better, less destructive, certainly less expensive, if a board member has concerns about ethical issues to discuss them with a board or board members, rather than sling ethics charges back and forth.
Did you recommend that he talk it out with the board members?
That's what the exact discussion was, that it would be a discussion about general concerns about ethical behavior, rather than, let's say, ethics charges, or rather than specific allegations leveled at different board members. I do not know whether or not the allegations would have been, even without names being mentioned, specific enough that individuals could tell who was being discussed. So I don't know about that. But certainly the idea was that a discussion about ethical concerns and ethical proprieties and confidentiality that needs to be honored is far less destructive than ethics charges against board members. And so I do think that is in the taxpayer's best interest to have that type of discussion rather than charges back and forth at taxpayer expense.
I don't know if it was the most sage advice you gave. Quite, I know you're very experienced, you've been around a long time, but you know, due diligence when these serious allegations came about, I would think you would have asked to see what he was going to read, what asked the situation. You know, you're a pretty sharp guy. You know, I've known you in the past to get stuff. You know, you review stuff, and I'm surprised that you did not review what was going to be talked about. It's bizarre. That's your answer. Okay. All right.
I don't know if there's another question pending.
Are you saying the board president made the final call?
Well, I work for you folks.
I know that.
So I don't make the final call on anything. I make recommendations. I made a recommendation then. I've described it to you this evening, just as I described the reason for our advice as to the resolution spread before you.
All right. Thank you, and I thank you for being here tonight. Quite frankly, I would have hoped you'd been here the past one or two meetings. I think it was very controversial, our meetings. It was a lot of sensitive issues coming about. And, you know, put yourself in a board member's shoes if this was happening to you. You know what I mean? If it was happening to you, you'd want to make sure the situation was fine.
I agree with you entirely. And as I said, the details of what's going on were not part of the discussion. I do attend these meetings when asked to attend, and if I'm needed here more frequently, that's certainly
fine.
Were
you asked to attend any of the past two meetings?
No, sir.
You were not asked?
No, sir.
Really? Oh. Okay. Final questions.
Don't show up at people's houses and just knock on the door and say, what's for dinner?
Well, I would have thought, like you said, you're working for us. I would have thought that we would have asked you to be present, and maybe you just couldn't make it. You're busy. But I at least thought we would have asked you to be present.
Typically, if I'm asked to attend a meeting and I can't, someone else from my firm will attend. Right.
But you weren't even asked.
The first meeting in several months that I've been invited to is this evening's, and I'm happy to be here.
Right. Are you, final question, if you would, and thank you for allowing me to speak with you. Are you going to give advice to our board president tonight to bring closure to this matter, to bring closure to the fellow board members, to bring closure to the taxpayers, the citizens of our community who have been disturbed by this? Are you going to give that advice? How to bring closure to this, to Mr. Dinkoff?
I guess if Mr. Dinkoff is going to ask for that, I would provide that advice.
Okay, thank you.
You have a question, ma'am? Can you state your name and address, please?
Carolyn Pause, Clinton Township. I don't know if you can hear me.
We hear you.